Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Previously on the Pavement Top 50.
So today we're talking all about song number 18 from the masterpiece Wowie Zowie. It's the absolutely gorgeous Father to a Sister of Thought. Vish, what are your initial thoughts about this song?
Well, you know, I was so happy that we landed on this as a song to talk about because I do love Wowie Zowie. I have a sense memory of picking it up when it came out. I think the day it came out. This is interesting. It's a really fascinating song because in some ways it's super accessible musically.
Yes.
It leans with the pedal steel and some of the other moves. It leans towards kind of country music. I will say, as I was pondering it, I know we are in a vacuum here of people who love Pavement.
Right.
And who love Stephen Malcolmus. But as I was listening to this in preparation for our chat, I'm like, Malcolmus is like an underrated everything.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode of our Top 50 Countdown for seminal indie rock band Pavement. Week over week, we're going to count down the 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an abacus and a four-slice toaster I had fashioned into a time machine. Now I pull the blinds of the time curtain. Yesterday is totally getting a do-over. How will your favorite song fare in the rankings? You'll need to tune in to find out. So there's that. This week, I'm joined by Pavement superfan Mike fucking Hogan. How the hell are you, Mike?
I'm doing good, JD. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you, too. I've listened to you, you know, over the years with Bob on the pod, and yeah. We've been lonesome for you.
Yeah, I was, you know, in advance of this, I was like, God, when did we start that podcast? And I looked, and the first episode was August of 2017. And we did 177 episodes, the last one being December of 2022. And I think that was the only one we did that year too. I don't know. I haven't checked, but
Wow.
we were pretty active, for a few years with some breaks in between. It was fun.
So will the will the podcast be dusted off at some point? Will we get the Pavement-esque reunion tour?
That's kind of the open question. Okay. I wouldn't say no. We don't have any immediate plans. The last time I talked to Bob about it was probably about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago.
Sure.
And he said maybe after the new year. You know, I think we really paused things because, you know, obviously Pavement was rehearsing and then touring and things were hectic. We actually had this... I had this idea to do a different like tour diary podcast in every city where you know, of course the podcast that we did was very synchronous where we would talk back and forth. We would play songs, but I had this idea where he would asynchronously record like 5 or 10 minutes about like, I'm in Kansas City and here's experience with Kansas City, and then he'd pick a song that was Kansas City based and I'd pick a, you know, but it never ended up working out. It would have been fun.
That would have been great. Maybe on the next reunion tour.
But yeah, I think, you know, I mean, between that and, you know, he's had some life changes, I've had some life changes, we kind of just were like, let's take a pause. Let's maybe start fresh. You know, after 177 episodes, it's like, how many different bands can you talk about that you haven't talked about in the first 176? So, you know, I think if we came back, we would probably, you know, might keep the same format, but allow ourselves the opportunity to revisit and, you know, almost treat it as a fresh start. So,
That's interesting. You heard it here first, folks.
no promises. You know, but no promises either way, really.
Right. Oh, that's cool. It's, you know, you're saying there's a chance.
There is a chance. Right.
Cool. Well, let's get right into it. Let's talk about your Pavement origin story.
Boy, I think I first heard of Pavement. I wasn't early enough to get the first 7-inch.
Okay.
But I think maybe the first Drag City 7-inch was probably the first time I'd heard of them. I don't know if I even bought it at the time. I was in that era. I was in college. I was very active in the college radio station at Santa Clara University, KSCU. And I was a music director for a little while. And there, you know, obviously Pavement was getting a bit of buzz. And I remember them just being this band that had put out a few singles. They were getting written up in zines. You know, there wasn't social media, so there wasn't any of that kind of buzz at that time. And it was like, unless you had someone that had a copy, you know, it was almost impossible to even find in stores. So they had this just kind of air about them of like, and there were no photos of them. There weren't even their names. It was just SM and Spiral Stairs. And it was just this like very mysterious, like, who the hell are these guys? And then bits would come out where it was like, oh, you know, one of them worked at the Whitney as a guide, and they recorded in this studio in Stockton, and you know, the drummer is the guy that runs the studio. He's just this old crazy dude, you know. And it was just like little bits of information would kind of come out, and I think really what kind of hooked me was probably the 10-inch Perfect Sound Forever, and then by the time Slanted and Enchanted came out, it was like I was full on like waiting for it. And I think the first time I saw them, the only time I saw them until the reunion tour a couple years ago, was in San Francisco at the Kennel Club a week before Slanted and Enchanted was released.
And holy shit.
Yes, because I worked at the radio station, we had an advanced copy. So I was like vigorously listening to the record, and so totally prepared for the show. And it's funny because I think it was written up in one of the papers, one of the San Francisco papers, because the buzz was already even big, even though Matador was still a pretty small label at the time. It was like this local-ish band is kind of getting some attention. And it was funny, the show was sold out. And Gary was out front, like, shaking people's hands as they walked into the show, like, could not believe that everybody was there to see him. You know, he'd been trying for years and years to hit it big in the music industry and couldn't believe that these two weird college kids that came into his studio was, like, his venue for actually getting some level of success. So it was kind of cool.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
So how was that show?
It was amazing. It was a little ramshackle, as some of their shows back then could have been. But I just remember, you know, because I was so excited for it, I just remember being like awed, like, wow, this is great, you know. And then I never got a chance to see them again until they did the reunion tour. It was probably a little over 30 years between my first and second Pavement show.
Hey, you know what? When you see them before Slanted drops, you're doing pretty good, right? I think that's phenomenal.
I think the article in the paper said it would be like their 20th show that they'd played or something like that. So it was certainly one of, you know, because before then they were just a recording band, and, you know, they didn't, it was, you know, all of the, I think the earlier records were just the two of them plus Gary. And so they sort of had to figure out, like, how are we as a band when we're playing out live? And, you know, it was early enough that I think that I was still seeing some of that evolution of what Pavement would become.
Oh, that is so fucking cool. I didn't get on board until very late, very late. So they were already broken up. I got on board very late, and it's just listening to all this kind of talk, which I've heard, you know, a lot. I've done a lot of these at this point, these interviews, and listening to people's Pavement origin stories. You know, there's a lot of people who came late, but the people who came early have really fantastic stories. Like, you know, the fact that they were a mystery, you know, and that's something when I interviewed Spiral, he said they really, that was something that was really important to them. And in fact, he was disappointed when they sort of dropped the curtain.
Yeah.
Like he wished they could have kept going with the, I don't know how they would have done that. Played in Lucha masks or something.
I don't know. Daft Punk did it for how many years, right?
Oh, that's good point. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Or the Residents, and, you know, I mean, it had been done before, but yeah, that was certainly part of the mystique for me, and seeing them, like, wow, they're real people. When I saw them live, it was like, this is the, you know, yeah, the reveal of the curtain. But yeah, and that was why when Slanted, I mean, perfect Sound Forever too, but especially when Slanted dropped, it was like, felt very fresh, felt familiar, but totally different at the same time. And that's why, in some ways, I think my experience of Pavement is just naturally different from somebody that experienced them later, when they already had this full body of work, and you could see that progression, because there was just this question of where were they going and what would they do next. And
I can imagine.
The EP that came after was like, oh my God, these four songs are just amazing, incredible. And it was, it was interesting. It was a very exciting time, and they were like a very important band for me in that period of my life.
I bet. So what is your go-to record at this point? Do you have one? Or, I mean, I know that's a tough question, because it probably changes week over week, but, you know, just think about right now. What would you, if we get off the phone here and you want to just reminisce about some Pavement, what are you going to throw on?
It's hard, because, you know, I think as somebody who had that level of experience about, like, this mystique early on, and the 7-inches were, and, you know, the early albums were really just so ingrained in my memory. Like, I almost don't need, I listened to Slanted and Enchanted before our talk today, and it was probably the first time in a couple of years that I'd listened to it. But it was like, I knew every one of those songs so intimately. I knew every note, every lyric, every, you know, ba, 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 you know, like every little, like, part of the songs, in a way that the later albums I'm not as intimately familiar with. So when I listen to a later record, it's almost like hearing it fresh, you know, and I can't distance myself from my experience of, like, Perfect Sound Forever back when it came out, or Slanted went back when it came out. But that said, I think if I were to just be like, I want to put on a record, well, I mean, Watery Domestic is probably my favorite piece of work that they did, but it's only four songs, so it's
can't
like,
go wrong. But it's so fast, yeah. It just so is fast. Over so quickly.
And I think I only had it on CD. I only recently bought the vinyl of it, and I didn't realize that the little, like, dee 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 dee, you know, that little, like, transitional piece. Yeah. I didn't realize it was at the end of a song. I thought it was the intro of a song, because I always just listened to the CD.
Ah.
And it just went, I never paid enough attention to it, because I wouldn't listen to it on shuffle or anything. And so it was almost revelatory when I got it on vinyl. I was like, this is like the way it's supposed to be. Like, and then I flipped the side over.
That must have been brain busting.
It was kind of weird. I thought that, that was the intro to the song, but it was really the outro. So,
rock. Well, speaking of Pavement songs, should we get into the song that you're going to cover?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we'll be right back after listening to song number 17.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
17. There you have it. Song number 17 is Zurich is Stained from the debut long play Slanted and Enchanted. Mike, is this song in fact slanted and or enchanted? Discuss.
Yes, indeed. I love this song. This song, it's a good one. It really is. And it's sort of an oasis. I love where it appears on the record. Mm. It's coming straight out of the chaos of Conduit for Sale and right before the chaos of Chelsea's Little Wrists, and you get this like really light, breezy but fast song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a ballad, it's not like Here. It is this breezy, light, almost feels like it would be at home on the Velvet Underground's third record. You know, there's this mood to it that feels in some ways different from earlier in the record and even what comes a little later, where there's a lot of like fuzz and noise. It's just this light little break that's almost this perfect little slice of, I don't even know how long it is, but I'm guessing it's less than 2 minutes. It's just
really, yeah, it's in and out.
Yeah, it's in and out. And the whole time, Malkmus, I don't think really pauses the vocals for more than a second or two. It's just beautiful little instrumentation with his vocals kind of just strung throughout it all.
Yeah. I'm singing it in my head right now, and you're right. It's
yeah. I mean, you know, and it's like the chorus keeps coming back, and then he ends it with the ba ba da ba. You know, like the just it is a perfect little song. It's just a perfect slice of. And if I were to play somebody that had never heard Pavement, if I would play them, what is, from a songwriting perspective, what is a quintessential Pavement song? You know, there are probably a few others that might come to mind, but this is like one of those like sleeper cuts. It's just such a perfect little song that doesn't get the buzz of like the Summer Babes or, you know, some of the more hit songs. I love it though.
Yeah. It's a really great song. It's very different from the rest of the record for sure. It like, maybe even it's like more at home on Crooked Rain, mm-hmm. like, you know, like just sonically, but you're right, where it hits in the record is just right. And it's a refreshing little wafer, you know,
yes.
before the next meal.
Yes.
Or the next course.
yeah. And I think because of where it hits in the record, it feels mellower, you know, like it feels in contrast to some of the other songs that come before and after it.
What did you say is right before it? Conduit?
Conduit, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So it comes out of that like frantic chaos into this breezy little, you know, there's like the twang guitar, there's no fuzz, it's just this kind of light, catchy little, very short song, but that feels fully formed. It's not one of those songs that feels too short, you know, it just is
like an idea song. Like, right. Like there's a lot of those on Wowie, for example, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Right. Or, you know, I mean, I can even think of like Emmett Rhodes' Lullaby. I don't know if you know that song. It was used, I first heard of it in, I think Royal Tenenbaums, one of those Wes Anderson movies, but, okay. It's a beautiful little song and it's only a minute long and it just feels too short. Zurich Estane does not like that. It just feels fully formed, even though it's only a minute in, I don't know, 50 or something.
Yeah. What was I going to ask you? I was going to ask you, if you've got a line on what it's potentially about. And if not, that's cool.
I don't know. I mean, Malcolm
is hard.
I kind of try not to read in too much to the lyrics because I also don't really trust the lyrics. If you know what I mean, like if the lyric sheet is often, or not, I wouldn't say often, sometimes the lyric sheet, like I'm looking at the lyric sheet right now that is included in the vinyl of Slanted and Enchanted, and the one that stands out is not necessarily Zurich Estane, but on Loretta's Scars, you know, the line, from now on I can see the sun, is always what I knew it to be, but right. The lyric sheet says, from now on I can see the slums. And so...
Really?
Yeah. 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 And so I sort of, especially with Malcolm's lyrics, yeah. I try not to read too much into it. It's just this like kind of catchy, you know, like a jumble of words that make sense within the music of the song.
I call it word salad.
Yeah.
I call it word salad. You get a tasty morsel in every forkful, you know, there's a little bit of everything. There's imagery. Yeah. There's, you know, these slant rhymes sometimes, really cool phrases, you know, memorable phrases.
Yes. I almost feel like, you know, I can't sing it strong enough is a great line. I don't know it what is. It's about, but it's, and I don't even know if it's about, I mean, the song is Zurich is Stained. I don't even think it's about Zurich, you know?
there's no other sort of mention of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, it's okay. It's not your fault. Cool. Whose fault is it? Do we even care? I don't know. I just try not to read too much into it. And I think one of the things that I notice, and what I've always kind of tried to avoid when I would talk, the songs when Bob and I did Three Songs Pod, is I would try and talk about the music and not try to analyze the lyrics so much, unless there was something that really like stood out and grabbed me and resonated with me.
Right.
But yeah, I think Malkmus is, especially at this phase of his career, I felt like each line was its kind of own self-contained mini story, and often didn't even like match or connect or follow the line that came after it. So to your question, right, what's the song about? I have no idea.
That's cool. Well, I'll pivot completely then, and we'll go back to Three Songs for a minute. How the fuck, did you and Bob connect?
Yeah, this is kind of funny because, obviously I was a fan for a while, for a long time. And I'm thinking back in 2013, I moved to New York City and I started working at a horse racing company.
Okay.
And actually, it was 2014 that I moved there in 2013, probably a year later, got the job at the horse racing company. And as I'm sure you know, Bob has always been interested in horse racing.
Yeah.
And what he was, I was based in New York, he was based in Iowa, but he was the local representative for the Iowa racetrack for the company that I worked for. And so when I get there and I see, Bob Nastanovich,
holy shit,
I'm like, hey, man, what's up? And we started working together for work. And then I was like, I'm familiar with your band, because I was also certainly familiar with the Silver Jews as well.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
And so we just became friends. I worked there, but I think Bob got laid off, because horse racing is not really a growth industry. So Bob got laid off, and then a year or two later, I got laid off. But we were always friends. I'd consider us, friends. We became friends, even though we lived a couple thousand miles away from each other.
Yeah.
And after I got laid off in 2017, I was like, hey, I got some time now. You want to do a music podcast? And he was like, yeah, sure. And so we threw around ideas of like what it would be about and how we would approach it and what we would call it, all of that. And he suggested three songs, and we just kind of bandied back and forth, hey, this is sort of how I want to do it. I just want it to be like two friends talking music and sharing music that we like with each other, kind of like the way it was back when Pavement started, when you just couldn't find things online. There was no online. You just had to hear about it because somebody you knew was into it and be like, oh, you got to check this out. You'll love it. So that was sort of the spirit of it. We started, I think our first episode, I know our first episode, I didn't have a mixer. It sounds like shit. You couldn't really hear Bob. Bob couldn't hear the songs. But I just left it up anyway, cause they were good songs, and it was a good chat. And then by episode two, I bought a mixer and a mic, and we were off.
Game changed.
Game changed. And we were friends for probably 2.5 years before we did the podcast.
Yeah.
And then we did the podcast for probably another 2.5 years before we met in person. So I knew Bob and was friends with Bob for 5 years before we'd ever.
And you guys did an episode together in person, right?
Or a couple? We did one episode in person. Yeah.
Okay. I remember listening to that one.
Yeah. And it was,
I've listened to a bunch, but I specifically remember that one.
Yeah. It was sort of weird because, we're doing this with video. I can see you. So, you can see me. I can see when you're ready to talk. we didn't do any of that. Bob didn't want to be on camera. He felt uncomfortable. He's out on his back porch. He's just like, you know, running around. You'd hear the dog in the background. So I didn't know when he was done talking, and we would sometimes talk over each other. So doing the one in person when we could actually like see each other's cues was a little strange, to be honest, because
yeah,
we had done, I don't know, at that point, 2.5 years worth, probably close to 100 episodes.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like it was like in the 90s, that episode.
Yeah.
But I might be wrong.
Yeah, that was probably after, because we did the 100th episode. Yeah, we did the 100th episode, which was the David Berman Silver Jews focus one, which is still our most listened to episode. That was the episode 100. And I know we recorded it a few months before we met in person. So, yeah, we probably did 110 before we'd ever met in person. And the reason we met was Bob came to Portland in January of 2020 because there was a tribute show to David and to Silver Jews. And so I think there were a number of people that played, including Rebecca from the Spinanes played a set. There were a few others that played, but the headliner was just a duo of Bob and Steven playing Silver Jews stuff, which, and you can find it, you can find the recording on YouTube. And famously, it's great. It's actually worth seeking out because, you know, it was cool to see. But someone in the comments was like, "This sounds like shit." And then Bob replied and he's like, "Sorry, man, I can give you your $5 back," or whatever. And then the guy was like, "Oh, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to," you know, he's like,
that is spectacular.
Yeah. So it's worth watching for sure, but it's almost worth seeking out to find that little nugget of exchange, in the YouTube comments section. But yeah, that was the first time we met.
Did you parlay that meeting into an opportunity to meet with SM?
I did. Yes. So this is sort of my meeting Malkmus story. Although I actually met him in the 90s briefly at Satyricon when the Geraldine Fibbers were playing. He lived in Portland at that point, and I think I was still down in Eugene, but I was and have been good friends with Nels Klein for years and years and years, put out some of his records back in the 90s. And then he got into the Geraldine Fibbers and was playing guitar with them. And they played a show at Satyricon, and I was hanging out with Nels, and Steven came to the show. And so I met him briefly then in the 90s. But then, yeah, flash forward 20 plus years, January of 2020. So the day before the show that they played with a tribute to David is the day that Bob and I hung out. We recorded the podcast that day. We went and had lunch. We had dinner. We just hung out together all day. And then I was going to head home, and he's like, "Just crash in Steven's basement. There's two couches there. I'm on one. You can crash on the other." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, no problem." And so we got back there, I don't know, around midnight. Everybody was asleep. We go down to the basement and, you know, whatever. And then I get up around 8 or so to go to leave. And the basement stairs were right at the top, the top of the stairs was right at the kitchen. And so I went, there was a bathroom in the basement. I went and used the bathroom, and I was about, like, putting my shoes on and about to leave. And Steven's wife, Jessica, comes to the top of the stairs and is like, Bob. And I'm standing there, and I just say, like, I didn't know what to say.
Like, of course.
Like,
holy shit.
I'm like, Bob's friend. And she's like, "Oh, Bob had a sleepover." And I was like, "Yeah, hi, I'm Mike." So so that was sort of a strange little, and then I got, you know, got my shoes and my jacket, and I'm like going up the stairs, and what, at the top of the stairs, it's like you see the full kitchen, and, you know, Jessica and Steve's daughters were in the kitchen having breakfast. And I'm like, Nice to meet you. Thanks for letting me crash here, even though you didn't know I was crashing here. You know, like, hey, I'm Mike. And just like really sheepishly like trying to leave. And the back door is right kind of you go to the top of the stairs and to the right is the kitchen. And straight ahead is the side door that goes to their driveway. And I'm like trying to open the side door and Jessica's like, oh, they kind of sticks a little bit. Do you want me to help? And I'm like, oh, I think I got it. And so I'm like fiddling with the doorknob for like 10 seconds, which felt like 2 minutes. And then I finally got it opened and it was like, all right, thanks. See you later. And then later that day, you know, Bob said, come on over. We'll hang out. And so I came over later that day and then met them in earnest. And they were very sweet. She was very sweet. You know, I was like, I'm really sorry. And I was here. And she's like, yeah, don't worry about it. And then Steven was there. And he was like, they were just kind of prepping for the show later that evening. And he was very nice. He actually gave me, he had just finished reading Lou Reed's, a biography on Lou Reed. He was like, oh, wow. You want it? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I've got Steven's copy of the Lou Reed biography up in my bedroom somewhere.
That's spectacular. I think that's really cool.
Yeah
borrowing books from Stephen Malkmus. And any other chances that you met him or
I've met him briefly a few other times, you know, when Bob would come to town when Pavement was rehearsing. I think they rehearsed for about almost a month before they did their first reunion tour in 2022. Bob stayed here for probably, maybe not quite a month, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, I would not every day, but regularly after they were done, I would, you know, hang out with Bob a little bit and we'd get some dinner or whatever. And one night there was some band playing and, Steven and Jessica went and we tagged along. And so I've met him a number of times. I would say we're friendly, but we're not friends. I don't have his number. He doesn't have mine. And, you know, if I were to run into him around town, which happens now and then, I'd probably feel too shy to say hi. But if I did, I think he would know who I was and be okay with it.
That's pretty neato, I would say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is one of the things about Portland. It's kind of a small town. It's a big enough city, but it's also kind of a small town.
Yeah. Well, I want to share something with you because it's kind of funny. You know, it's in the lore of meeting Malkmus. I reached out to Bob when I first conceived of this podcast in the fall of 2018 and asked him if he wanted to co-host meeting Malkmus. And this is the premise and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't have it all nailed down at that point. But I gave him the highlights and he's like, he responded back and he's like, sounds fun, but I'm already doing a podcast. And I was like, tell me what it's called. And that's how I found out about your podcast. But that's also how Bob ended up not on meeting Malkmus. If he would have done it.
Well, so I apologize because I feel like I'm the reason why he said no. Although I would have to check. There were times and I think that the fall of 2018 was one of those times. There were times, and if you look back through our episodes, you'll see, you know, big gaps, and it's often associated with life events. And my daughter was born in July of 2018, and I think right after that, we actually did probably a 6-month pause because I was like, but I'm working, and you know, I mean, I took a little time off. You know, I'm working.
Sleeping.
I got a baby. Yeah. Like, as priorities go, I don't know if I'll have time to talk to you for a little bit. So I appreciate Bob being loyal to me. It was probably during a pause and he probably could have said, hey, I've got the time right now. I am doing a podcast, but we're not doing it right away. You know,
that's funny.
Yeah. So.
So do you have any anything you want to plug other than Three Songs or, you know, at this point? Like, what's the episode that people should grab of Three Songs aside from the Berman episode? Like, what would you say is a standout episode that gives you a real sense of what the show is?
Well, okay, so those are almost two questions, because the standout episode of what the show is, the premise of the show was Bob would bring three songs to play to me that he thought I maybe didn't know and might like, and I would do the same for him. And so some of those early episodes where we were still finding our footing were a lot of the songs where it was like, oh my God, I fucking love this song so much. Like the X's State of Shock, you know, like some of these go-between songs or some of these like old blues songs that just like really resonated with me in a strong way. I was like, I don't know if you know this, but like, I want to play it for you and just get your reaction. So, you know, I don't know. I don't have the list in front of me, and my screensaver went to sleep. So I'm not even going to log in to figure out what some of those early episodes were. What I also tried to do, and it was never a spoken thing between Bob and I, but I was inherently conscious of the fact we were two middle-aged white dudes talking music, and I wanted to make sure we weren't just talking about white dudes.
No, it is music. Very, if you haven't listened to it, listen to it. But there are like, I'm making this up, but like throat singers. And or did you have a throat singer on?
I don't know if we went quite that wild, but we would do. Yeah.
It's like, everywhere though. It's like you guys covered the spectrum.
Yes. Music, all kinds of genres, all kinds of countries. We tried to go all around the world, you know, and we tried to also be very inclusive of all genders, and, you know, because again, it's just two white dudes talking. We didn't want it to like very focused on like Western music. You know, that said, we didn't want to make it so obscure that people would be like, there's not anything here for me, you know. Like we would try to walk that line where it would still be fun and worthwhile. And, you know, I think if nothing else, it was just, I hope that people came because they liked Bob and they liked me and they felt like they were listening in to friends and they felt like they were one of our friends that were experiencing this music and experiencing this conversation at the same time. I hope it was more that and not like, oh, I'm going to listen because today they're talking about, you know, Sebado or whatever. I'm going to listen because today they're talking about some band I know and I want to hear what they say. I hope we built enough of an audience that liked us and trusted us. So
that's it. It's the trust piece. It's like you guys were sort of a modern day equivalent of like the record shop dude, you know, that trusted guy that, you know, guy or gal that is like, hey, I saw you buying these two records.
Yeah.
You're probably going to totally dig this.
You know? Yes. Yes. And
tastemakers.
I hope the unjudgmental record shop dude that wasn't like, oh, I can't believe you bought this. Like, you know,
because I don't mean that.
You know, you know that those, some of those types, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We wanted it to be, you know, I also didn't want it to be a situation where I was, you know, ripping on someone's art. If I didn't like it, I would just be like, oh, it's maybe not my thing. But most of the time, everything Bob played for me, I was into or right. found some sort of, found some sort of way to resonate with. But aside from that, I mean, I'm not doing any podcasts. I don't have anything to plug. I mean, I think those that have listened to the show know that Bob runs a small record label. And, you know, back in the 90s, I ran a small record label called Little Brother Records. I've got a few of the old back stock. Maybe I'll send me your address. I'll send you a little package of some of the old records I put out.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and it's, so, but I wouldn't say I have that to plug. It's just part of my origin story.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I really want to thank you for taking this time with me today. It's been a blast talking to you, dude.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thanks for thinking of me. Thanks for including me.
No, you were near the top of the list when I started thinking of like people that I solicited to like on my Twitter and stuff like that. I asked basically anybody and everybody, but then I also had like the celebrity wing, you know, and you appeared on that list. So
great company
you're in.
I don't know if I would even come close to listing me as a celebrity, but I appreciate the thought.
In the podcast, in the indie rock podcast world,
I mean, you are. If you want to say our top episode, which is the Berman one that got maybe 12,000 listens, if that makes me a celebrity, hey. I mean, you know.
If you had 12,000 people in your living room listening to you talk, that would be a pretty fucking big deal.
That's true. I don't know if I'd have enough food for them, but
I had a friend tell me that early on in podcasting. They were like, because I was like, I don't know, I don't want to put myself out there and see the numbers. And they were like, if you have 12 people that listen, like that's pretty cool.
Well, I think
more than that, but
the sense that I get is that you approach it the way that Bob and I approached it. And, you know, I had the advantage of kind of tagging along to a celebrity. And so right. Bob's name helped bring in listeners. Yeah. But we didn't do any promotion other than maybe, you know, little like light Twitter promotion.
Right.
We didn't solicit any sponsors or anything like that. We didn't ever want to try and find a way to monetize it, because if we were doing that, it wouldn't be what I wanted. Yeah, it wouldn't be fun. It would be like work, you know. And I wanted it to be my release for like, here's an opportunity to talk to my friend about music. And maybe, you know, maybe we will find an audience. You know, if you're authentic and you're doing something for the right reasons, often the audience finds you. It may take a little while, but I think that's also about the way I look at a lot of the music that I like. You know, bands like Sonic Youth weren't, you know, or The X is another huge band that I just have loved for their whole career. They're not worried about, is it going to sell or whatever? And they find the audience eventually.
Yeah, I would say authenticity is a reasonable place to start from. Yeah.
That's the best I can do.
Yeah. No. Oh, hey, again, thanks so much. And, wash your goddamn hands.
Thanks for listening to Meeting Malcolmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email, jd@meetingmalcolmus.com.
Duvra! Podcasts and such.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Most weight loss plans are one size fits all, not taking into account each person's individual needs. Noom is here to change that. Noom Weight uses psychology. That's why they say losing weight starts with your brain, but it also takes into account your unique biological factors, which also affect weight loss success. The program helps you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have cravings. Everyone's journey is different, so your daily lessons are personalized to you and your goals. One of the great things about Noom is that it's nourishing instead of restrictive. They focus on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything for that matter. Have cravings? Food FOMO? Noom can help you lose weight while still enjoying your favorite foods. To date, Noom has helped more than 5.2 million people lose weight. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com.